You are listening to 99.1 WQRT LP Indianapolis, and this is Create Here. Produced by artists and curators from Big Car Collaborative, Create Here is your place to listen to conversations with people making intriguing, innovative, and impactful things happen on the cultural front in Indianapolis, Indiana, and beyond. Find out more and access additional episodes at WQRT.org.
This is Create Here, and I'm Jim Walker, and I'm here with Lee Bennett. Hi, Lee.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for being here. The thing we're talking about is your publication. You have a company that you run that is called Read Write Books. Can you tell us a little bit about your company and a little bit about the magazine that we're talking about today?
Sure. Well, Read Write Books is sort of an ever-evolving thing. It's basically what I do to fulfill my creative self. So it used to be handmade books, and it has kind of evolved into publishing, and I also sell used books to kind of help fund those published projects. The main thing I do is, at the moment, is do my project Quotidian, which is going to be a five-volume set. The tagline is Exploring the Mundane Through Art and Writing. We do Quotidian. It's going to be five volumes. Each volume has a prompt. And then I do a call for submissions and ask writers and artists to respond to that prompt as it pertains to their everyday lives. Whatever that means for them is okay for me. So I kind of try to unify it with a, you know, introductory essay. And then I'm open to whatever people want to submit. So this is the third volume that just came out. The prompt for this one was repetition. The first one was layers, and the second one was connections. So it's kind of, you know, you can interpret that however you want, however you see fit with whatever creative medium that you have.
And you're based here in Indianapolis, and
yes,
and you've been doing this work from here since the beginning of the project, or have you done that in other places too?
No, that's right. So I've been running Read Write Books for a long time. It started when I lived in New Jersey, and that's when it was handmade books. But really, it's called Read Write Books because I'm just really focused on anything that has to do with reading, writing, or books. So putting things together into a book, reading a book, writing a book, a blank book. So I started doing Quotidian probably, it was actually surprisingly before the pandemic. So this didn't really stem from that time, but I think it was, I do about one a year. So probably 3 or 4 years ago, I started after, I had been living here.
And they're available around the city of Indianapolis, but also elsewhere in the various other places and other towns.
Yeah. So we have, I approach different brick and mortar retailers across the country. We're only in maybe a dozen other places, but lots of places around the city too.
And it's, I think it's a unique publication in that sometimes there are literary magazines that have a little bit of art in them or whatever that kind of breaks up the writing. But this is a very much a balance between visual art and writing.
Yeah, I try to do that. It's really open to whatever I get. I feel lucky anytime anybody submits anything to me. It's really precious and amazing that people send me their thoughts and their artistic work. And so I just consider what resonates the most with me and how I feel like, what I feel like that issue is about. And if it resonates, I put it in there. So yeah, I try to keep a good balance, but you know, I really also try to keep an open mind as to how it's going to turn out. So if we have an issue that has, you know, one person has 50 different photographs of some random thing, and I like it and it resonates, boom, half the magazine is that. That's fine. You know, like, yeah.
It feels like the art, and also comparing it to other publications sometimes is that art is nice and everything, but it's not as curated as, I feel like, to not compare you to somebody else, this is very well curated.
Oh, thanks.
Together. Like it feels like almost like a little bit of a you're walked into an exhibition because the art is put together and the writing connects with it as well. But in a, you know, you make connections that aren't like super literal or obvious.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it comes from, I always say I'm like a vibes person.
Yeah.
Just maybe a very millennial thing to say, but it's like there's a feeling that I'm going for, and it doesn't even matter whether the art or the writing is particularly good, like scholarship wise, mm-hmm. or like, you know, I'm not a professor. I'm not anybody special. So if the piece is like, yes, that's what I'm trying to say, it's almost right. like I have the idea and then I'm trying to see if anybody else knows what I'm talking about. And it turns out they do. So yeah, I'm glad that comes across cohesively.
Yeah. So you start off the issue with this Camus quote, mm-hmm. one must imagine Sisyphus happy. So for people who don't know that myth, Sisyphus is the guy, he's got a rock and he's got to keep pushing it up the hill over
That's
and
right.
over again. And it never, ever gets over the top of the hill.
Right. Right. So, yeah. And you know, this is, you know, generally interpreted as like a horrible punishment. Like
right.
how miserable to be constantly doing work and having your job never be finished.
Right.
So there's literally nothing more that I can relate to better, because that's yeah. like, that's life, you
sure.
know, and leave it to the ancients to just like hit the nail on the head and know exactly what we're talking about thousands of years later. You know, like that's what we're still doing. That's what everybody's still doing. It's just every day, you know, you start at the bottom, you roll it to the top, and then you go to bed and then you do it again. So
right.
I was fascinated by this idea of, you know, imagining that in a way that isn't a punishment.
Yeah, or it's even a joy to, and a lot of the work that is in the publication is about, you know, you have your artist who's marking, you know, in a rocking chair, Sarah Irvin,
mm-hmm.
and the movement of the rocking chair makes the art on the paper. And then poems about mundane, seemingly mundane things, going shopping or mowing the lawn or whatever it is. But life is not made up of these extreme awesome things all the time.
Right. Right. In fact, rarely. And the fascinating thing is that if you look closely, you realize that this is the extreme amazing thing.
Right.
You know? Like maybe you shouldn't spend so much time waiting for your big day or your big moment or your big promotion or whatever it is that you think you're looking forward to, because I find I'm always looking into the future, you know, like, oh, well, as soon as this thing happens, as soon as, you know, I graduate college, as soon as I get that job, as soon as my kids are out of diapers, as soon as, you know, whatever. And you're always kind of like waiting for these things to
yeah.
be over, you know, and you think as soon as I get this rock to the top of that hill, I'm going to have some kind of sense of accomplishment or pride or whatever it is that you're looking for. And it's like, I think a lot of people apparently share this feeling that's, why is that coming? Like, it seems like you're never really reaching that moment and
yeah.
something will happen and you're all suddenly at the bottom again. And so what do you do with that? And how can you just appreciate life and not dread every day? And I think the key is looking closely at what you're doing and what it means.
Yeah.
It turns out it's a lot.
Right. And that's what you talk about in your introductory essay, which is, I feel like part of what we have in society, and you talk about the community of accepting that we're in this together and understanding you're not alone in your life being made up of mundane things. But one of the things that we can do together, which is what writing and art shows us, is share that same,
yeah.
that experience with each other.
Yeah. And it's just the most beautiful thing to see how different people interpret that in their work. So you may think of something as drudgery and someone else is like, look at this beautiful thing I found in this moment. Or like Dana Piazza, who does these incredible drawings with just like a marker, and he's making line after line. You can almost like think about when you were a kid and you could just get lost in like using a crayon or a marker and just experimenting with that medium. And here he just like, he's doing this, you know, seemingly boring task over and over again. And when it's done, it's like, oh my God, it's like this undulating, gorgeous movement of just like, it's all one color and it's just one line repeated over and over and over again. And it's miraculously transformed, you know.
Right.
And why does someone want to spend the time making that? And why does, you know, how does one simple line suddenly become art? And like, it does.
Yeah.
It's beautiful. And I think when you look at something like that, or at least when I look at something like that, I get it. I'm like, oh yeah. You know, like I think of myself in that moment drawing those lines. What are you thinking about when you're drawing those lines? And you just feel it, you know?
Yeah. It represents also the path. Like these are paths that we're on in some way. I mean, even though the work is not representational, it still connects back to that's how it goes.
Yeah. Yeah.
So as you're putting this together, you're taking the submissions that you receive, but you're also making a lot of choices in how you assemble it. And this is probably connecting back to something that you're interested. Like how did you personally come to this interest in the everyday and the like quotidian isn't a word that people use a lot or they might not be as familiar with it. So you want to explain what it means?
It's kind of oxymoronic in that way because it's like an unusual word for a very, you know, common experience.
Yeah.
But quotidian does just literally mean like the mundane, the everyday, you know, the dishes, taking out the trash, doing the laundry, you know, those are your quotidian tasks. And I kind of liked it because it's transformative, you know, it's like, that's what this magazine is sort of about. Like, okay, it's about boring things. And I always think it's funny when I try to promote it by saying, you know, hey, do you want to read this thing about boring stuff?
Yeah.
But, you know, the word represents that too. It turns out that it's more beautiful than you expect.
There's a quote, I don't know if you've ever heard this before, but William Eggleston, who took pictures of seemingly boring things, he said that he was at war with the obvious.
Yeah.
And I think about that all the time because he's at war with the obvious, but the obvious is the most beautiful thing in the world. So that's like such a contradiction,
such a
and you have to think about it. But what's obvious is a beautiful sunset on the beach or the Grand Canyon or the Eiffel Tower.
Yeah.
But it's these other things and he's at war with what people expected to be a photograph or to be a work of art.
Yeah. That's exactly it. And like this came out of basically me becoming a mom and having my day suddenly just utterly full of only mundane tasks.
Right.
For a long time. So I started wondering, what do I do with all of this? You know, all this day upon day upon day of just, and you're never done, you know? I mean, I'm sure there are so many people who relate to this feeling, whether it's because you're a stay-at-home mom or you're a caretaker in another sense, or even just in a job that doesn't fulfill you. But like, what do you do with that? And and sometimes you don't have a choice, you know, that's what your life is. And it wasn't up to you, you know? And so how do you have that sense of pride in what you do or a sense of worth? And so I really wanted to explore that. And I took my pride out of it, you know, once you kind of remove like your expectations for what you think you should be doing or your expectations for how good you should be at something.
Yeah.
Like I went to college for graphic design and found myself completely out of practice. And this project was my effort to just really only do what I care about. And, you know, I have to give props to my friends who supported me in this concept, because I said, you know, well, what if I made a magazine and I just put whatever I wanted in it, and it was just like only could be about boring stuff. Like, mm-hmm. That's really what I want to see. Can you even imagine that? And they were like, yeah. And I realized very quickly that, yeah, we can imagine this, and other people imagine that, and they react to it and they understand it. And it's great. So yeah, I put what I want in there.
Yeah. The work that you share shows, like, for example, the one Albert Chamillard.
Yeah.
Where the instructions, and this is also seems like a crucial choice that you make in the publication, is that you give the artist this presence in terms of explaining or not explaining if they don't mm-hmm. want to, but sharing and writing about the work. And in the case of that artist, we get the whole system laid out for us, and then we see the pieces that come from it.
I love that. The list of criteria that he had in there, it's just hilarious and perfect. And, you know, sometimes it depends on the artist. Do they want you to really know what they're thinking, or do they not want you to? And for me, you know, when I choose someone to be in the magazine, it's because I am 100% on their team. I love what they're doing, and it's totally up to them, you know, how they feel it's best presented. And sometimes I really, really like to hear, you know, what they're thinking,
right.
Especially for his work. That's a good example. Do you want me to read some?
Yeah. So that's on. If you can, these things that are constraints, inspirations, bonus points, demerits. That's
So he calls this series Hyena. And when you look at them, you see, so they're a series of small repetitive lines that come together to make basically a graphic artwork. And you can see right away, like, oh my God, there's this huge blue arrow that must be full of thousands and thousands and thousands of tiny lines.
Right.
And his work is just visually arresting, but it's really amazing to have this background with it, because it shows you that, like, what are they thinking during the time that they're making all of these tiny lines? So, for example, under constraints, he has, must be a drawing as a finished work, not as a model for another medium. Must be completed using pen and ink exclusively. Must not utilize plain white paper. Must be conceptualized using current life events. Must not start over once a drawing has begun. Mistakes must be formatted into finished drawing. And if that's not just like a synopsis of life itself, that's basically what you have to do. But his inspirations, as he lists them, experience of existing, experience of looking, thinking, experience of being highly aware of your own demise, experience of aging, experience of being a parent and also being the offspring of another parent.
Yeah.
It's just great. I mean, it's just great.
Yeah. And then in the end, these demerits are awesome because they're like commentary on art and like a sort of self-critique of a semi-conceptual work that he's also doing himself.
Yeah, exactly. His demerits are smirking self-awareness, left-hand ink smudges, existential dread, heavy-handed conceptualism, purposeless technical skill.
So along with the mundane, and I think this is part of the aesthetic with some of the artwork that you have in here, is that there's an understanding of ephemeral quality to, so like with his pieces, they're drawn on this graph paper that might even have gotten a little bit crumpled during the process or whatever, and that's fine. And there's also some other things that artists have found, like rocks on the ground, or, you know, just things that are beyond, that are wouldn't be usually considered like a precious object.
Right, definitely. So obviously the mundane can include, you know, things that aren't precious.
Yeah.
But I thought collections was a good interpretation of the idea of repetition.
Yeah.
It intentionally, you know, you get multiples of things. And I don't know, this probably is one of my favorite themes so far, because it's amazing when you look at one thing on its own, you don't see much. And if you put a whole bunch of those things together, it suddenly becomes somehow profound. And, you know, that's what this whole issue is about. I think every artist sort of does that in a way. You know, if you take one single moment in your life, it can mean almost nothing.
Right.
And then once you stack all of those moments together into layers or into, you know, how are they connected together? It's like, oh my God, it's way more amazing and beautiful. Like if you look at these collections from Avery.
Yeah, Avery Gregory.
Yeah, Avery Gregory. I mean, they're absolutely stunning. Like how, especially this last one, she has a collection of small glass jars with cork toppers, and they're all filled with different samples of dirt that she has collected. And it's a literal rainbow. It's absolutely stunning. And if you were in any of these one moment places at any one time and you looked down, you'd think there's some dirt.
Right.
And here, you know, you put them all next to each other and it's like we're living in an amazing creation and you would never expect. You never expect that.
Well, a lot of what this is about, too, is time and freezing time. So you can, these rocks, if they're out in the world is moving all the time, you don't see them.
Yeah.
But when you stop and hold it in your hand or take a picture of it or put it in a book, you're freezing time for longer periods of time. So now these things are frozen here forever.
Right. I've never really thought about that. But yeah, you're totally right.
Yeah. And that's what poems and like if you think about a haiku, for instance, that's what it is a picture that you're taking that you want to freeze it, you know, and own that for the moment because everything is always just going to go.
Yeah. Down. Yeah. And it's almost like a balance though. I'm not trying to, what's the word? Put this stuff on a pedestal
right,
you know, over glorify it. And
yeah.
I want to somehow mesh together its absolute amazingness and that it's also, yeah, ephemeral. It's also actually not that important, but that's also what makes it incredible. And it's like you keep going back and forth. And, you know, the older I get, the more I realize how everything is so full of ambivalence.
Yeah. And when you think about all of these things that you're capturing and helping the artists and the writers who are able to feel like, as I do feel, I should mention that I have a poem in here. So I do feel like all of us who are out doing this work alone, you know, you think about somebody like Emily Dickinson, who was like supposedly home a lot and writing in a little tiny bubble, like they're, you know, you're in your own little home. This is a way for people to feel that their observations are not maybe validated, but are appreciated.
Yeah, because they are. And the other thing about, you know, that I set up, that I told myself when I started this magazine is, you know, anyone's going to be in here. This isn't going to be some kind of pretentious, like, reach out to the most amazing people I can, although I do that as well.
Yeah.
But, like, my neighbor is in it. You know, like, the great thing about everyday life is that everybody's doing it. So,
right.
You know, anybody's voice is valuable. And anybody's voice, everybody has a perspective.
Right.
Everybody has an experience because we're all doing it. And so it's kind of an even playing field for me is what I'm trying to keep.
Do you think it's important for, because I feel like that the idea of people maybe feeling depressed because they start to not reach these zeniths anymore, or they have realized that that's not how life really works.
Mm.
Do you think that emphasizing the beauty in the mundane can help people feel better about life?
Yeah. I think that's the point.
Yeah.
I think that's what I'm trying to do in a mild way. You know, I think maybe we're not ever going to be ecstatically happy or ecstatically fulfilled or, you know, and maybe that's not the point. But I hope that maybe it's a shift in your perspective on what it means to be ecstatically happy or to do something that is important. So it's just kind of changing the perspective on what matters, because if you can sense in yourself that it doesn't really matter what you're doing because you just matter.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to do anything in particular to have a purpose and for it to be important for you to be here. So I guess in that way, yeah, it's hopefully helping you be okay with living a life on Earth.
In terms of publishing and books in general, you know, we're also fighting against an attention situation. So like people are having a lot of things to reduce their ability to pay attention. I mean, that's factual.
Yeah.
And the book itself is kind of forces you to, it's nice to read a book on print because you can't get an email or a notification on a book yet.
Yeah.
That takes you away from what you're reading.
Oh,
so
yeah.
Do you feel like the object of the book and the printing of it is a pretty important thing to do?
It's essential.
Yeah.
I'm dedicated to ink on paper.
Yeah.
That is just, I don't know, it's a sensual experience. It takes up space in a way that I like. It has a totally different feel to it. It's essential. And, you know, I do offer digital downloads. And that is a way that I can hopefully make it more affordable and accessible because, you know, I don't want there to be barriers to people seeing it. But in my opinion, yeah, I want this to take up physical space. Absolutely.
And as a person who makes handmade books yourself, the object of it is also the way it looks and the graphic design experience that you have. I mean, there's a very high level of quality in how you put this together.
Thanks.
That connects with the whole thematic and,
you know, it's trying to honor the work that's inside.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's a certain amount of reverence and respect that you get when you bind something together. It's almost like the covers are like this beautiful vessel for the precious items that are inside. And it's a way of presenting it that I think is irreplaceable. You know, like there's no way to replicate it except in book form. And I think that's why I love books so much too. You know, like those words, that passion that person had is gently wrapped in paper and bound, and it becomes just this like something that you have, you know. And it just matters when it takes up space and in your house. Yeah,
right. And it shows your personal level of obsession with detail and organization and stuff too.
Yeah.
So when you're assembling these things, you have the folks that are in the publication come from all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
You said that some of them were just submissions and you met them through, you didn't know them before, or did you know most of the...
I don't know most of these people.
Yeah.
I know maybe a couple. Well, you know, it changes as I go through the issues. So the first one was like, okay, I'm starting this project. I'm going to choose the low-hanging fruit. You know, where's my friends?
Right.
Where are the people I know who are doing cool things? But it has such a broad appeal that has surprised me. So, you know, I use social media to get the word out about what I'm doing, you know, to as many people as the algorithm allows. And then... it's mostly people I don't know. And that's just so cool. You know, like here's somebody I've never heard of and I get something in my inbox and I read it and I'm like, I'm almost in tears. You know, like here you are somewhere else. I don't know you. You sent me these incredible private thoughts of yours in a poem or in a piece of visual art. And we're in sync. And who knew? You know, me and this person, we're in sync this whole time. We're both thinking about these things. It's just great.
So I think we talked a little while back, just when we were over at the Tube Factory one day, about poetry not being an area that you were super familiar with, like earlier, and now you're a poetry publisher. The poems in here are often very visual and kind of like feel a lot like the art in terms of their image based and, you know, also not always super narrative focused. They're doing a lot of different things. How have you come to this place where you feel comfortable with poetry? And, you know, some people might be like, I don't know anything about poetry, so I can't make choices about it.
Yeah.
So if you've obviously do know about it because you're making these choices and they work. So.
Yeah. Well, it's good to have that feedback, but, that's a really good question. So I'm a reader. I read all the time, but I read, mostly fiction and nonfiction.
Yeah.
So poetry has always sort of felt aloof in a way that I think maybe some people feel about visual art. You know, I can easily connect with visual art. But poetry sometimes leaves me feeling like I'm maybe sort of standing outside of the circle.
Yeah.
But, you know, this whole project is a practice in me, like I said, sort of like shedding these expectations of what I should know or how smart I should be or how good I should be at something. And I think when I approach poetry in that way of just not expecting it to do anything in particular. So just reading it and thinking, did I feel something when I read that?
Mm-hmm.
Did I, you know, usually what I do is in my head, I say, yes, yes, yes. You know, is it making me do that? And I, you know, the poetry would be something that would be hard for me to analyze, like why or how I'm choosing it. But I have found it to be really helpful to sort of just completely shed those expectations.
Yeah. And that's maybe part of the problem with the poetry world now is that it's really academic and it is very insider. And so people might like things because they're used to them and not necessarily for the reasons that you're saying, because they, you know, it strikes you and you feel it. And maybe we need these kinds of disruptions where there's a person who has a good taste for it, but not necessarily an inside person.
Yeah. This is all about, like, you know, I didn't, that word academic really strikes me, you know, because sometimes it's great to dive deep and to really, you know, whittle away at what you're trying to say, and to say something that most people don't understand is fine and great. And for me, like, I would say there are things in quotidian that are like that, but there's things in quotidian that are not like that too.
Right.
So maybe putting them together helps, you know, reflect certain things in the different, in poetry versus visual art. Like those things, the quotidian, the fact that we're all humans living life every day, it's in everything. It's in all of this art underneath. So it's interesting to put them all together and see what kind of reflections you have. And it kind of strips away that sense of academia, but also that sense of maybe someone who is not as skilled at expressing themselves. And you kind of, you know, you look past that and you see the revelations that can be there as well.
Right. And the poetry is just, for people who haven't yet read it, is still very aware of poetry, and like Richard McCoy, who's an arts administrator and a writer who lives here in town, is referencing Allen Ginsberg. And then is it Yale Herzog?
Yeah.
It references James Wright poem. And so you're still connecting to poetry more broadly, but it's not in a way that is like a lot of illusion that people wouldn't get or whatever.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. And that when you put this thing together, you, like with the Herzog, there's a Herzog poem at the very end, right?
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about your choices in terms of structure. And, you know, you put some things here, some things there, you put the artwork here, and then in a couple cases, the artwork comes back again to, mm-hmm. and is it all like in one place?
Right. So I think I try to, it's interesting to be asked to sort of articulate this because I work in sort of a little bubble myself. So yeah. I think what I try to do is you look at a piece or you get to the end of the poem or the essay and you have this, you know, something that you got from it. And there, usually that connects to something else. So right. I like it to be a flow. Yeah. And there was something about Yale's piece that's at the very end here that felt just so incredibly, you know, it kind of sums up everything in such an amazing way.
Yeah.
And I knew immediately when I read that, that was going to be at the end.
Right.
And then like,
tell us about that poem while we're, before you go back.
Sure. This is one of the poems I'd love to read as sure. well, actually. Yeah, should I read it right now?
Yeah, let's hear it.
Okay, so this is called "The Body is a Tree of Wild Moss." The body is a soup. This body is a tree of wild moss. This body is a clay. It is always wet. I push my fingers into this body. I make holes, craters. I take this body to yoga. I talk about the bandhas of this body. I hold. I talk about the shoulders and the chest, and I open. But every week when I return, the holes in this body scream through the wet clay. How much time slips into the caves of these holes, the mouths, the organs? Once I let my lips to the outsides of these holes and howled. This body is a rain and a vessel for rain. This body is a moss and a vessel for moss. This body goes to pray. This body stands when everyone stands. This body sits. This body fills with wine and with coffee. This body doesn't cry, and when this body lays against another body that cries, this body turns into a not a body and disappears. This body is a jar of soup with lentils. This body has a tongue, and that tongue is burnt from a jar of soup with lentils. This body has a hole that does not let other bodies in. This body is a body inside of a body. This body is a hole. This body is a sculpture. This body is anything but a form. This body is a form. This body watches other bodies and makes them out of bodies. This body makes them into shapes. This body makes them into squares and circles and into flames. This body takes the body out of the body. This body is a coffee. This body is a vegan burger. This body is a grandfather and also an Alzheimer's. This body is a mother's breast. This body is a country. This body is an immigrant. This body is the thinking undress means abstract. This body is a no language. This body is an abstract. This body is an undress. This body is a dress. This body covers. This body covers this body with a blanket. All of the guts and all of the holes this body covers. All of the raindrops, all of the asthma, all of the mornings and every single birthmark and also the birthmarks that were scraped off. All of the blankets this body is covers. All of the beans, all of the synagogues, all of the periods, and all of the bloods that fall and fall and fall and make nothing. All of those. That's what this body is.
And this follows an interview you have with Sarah Irvin in there that's all about similar
yeah.
things in a totally different way.
It also references, which I didn't... I just struck me just now as the series Catching Water by Stephanie Barlow,
yeah.
where she collects rain in jars
right.
Over time and compares them and thinks about times and places that the rain fell and the snow fell and labels yeah. them with the dates.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just a perfect synopsis of everything in the magazine.
And it is about, it feels like it's also about the importance of the people, like these are people who made these things, but also you're able to honor them and we're able to appreciate them.
Yeah. Yeah.
The plan you have is, so you're three in, you're going to do two more.
Yeah.
Then does it become a new thing?
I don't know. I don't know what happens after that. You mean like as a group? Do they become something together?
No, well, that would be true. Yeah, right. But I mean, do you change to another topic or is this always going to be the broader topic that you want to be focused on?
I don't know. I have found that I love publishing, that I love hearing from other people what they're doing. And I love audaciously publishing anything and everything that I want. Right. So it doesn't matter. Like, there's no credentials involved. Like, I had this idea. Maybe I would fold gun wrappers in as many different ways as I can. And maybe I could have a 500-page book of just, like, different shapes of gun wrappers. Uh-huh. But, you know, I don't know where it goes after that. I imagine that I'm not going to be able to get away from some essential essence of trying to think about everyday life. I feel like that is going to be a theme. And that's what Yesterday Quarterly is. Should we talk about
this? Yeah. So this is your other
yes.
work that, and you had a recent issue come out too for this.
Right. So volume 3 of Quotidian and Yesterday Quarterly number 1 both came out at the same time. Yeah. Yesterday Quarterly is the first thing I have really done with someone else. So my friend Elizabeth DeClaire, she is a writer and she lives in Eau Claire, Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. She was in the first volume of Quotidian. So we became friends after that. Publishing is another great way to make friends,
right,
too. But she came to me with this idea and it just fits so perfectly within the idea of, you know, publishing things about everyday life.
Right.
It's called Yesterday Quarterly. So she's going to do a series of interviews. She does the interviews and edits them. And I publish and design the actual right. magazine. So it's just basically choosing people that we feel drawn to or interested in and asking them, what did you do yesterday? So it's based off of a project that Linda Rosenkrantz did in 1974, where she asked the photographer Peter Hujar, who was her friend at yeah. the time, to write down everything he did on a particular day. And then the next day she calls him up and says, okay, what did you do? And the funny thing is, he's like, oh, I kind of forgot we were doing this. But it doesn't matter, because once you get someone talking, it's so interesting and surprisingly keeps your attention and as they kind of lead you through your day. You know?
Oh, neat.
Yeah. So this is sort of an homage to that project. She only published one interview herself. And so we are hoping to make this an actual quarterly and,
nice.
You know, see where it goes.
Who's in this issue?
So this issue is Soren Staff. He is the lead singer of a band called Them Cooley Boys. And so he's a musician.
Yeah.
And it's kind of interesting to, you know, when you think of creatives, you think like, oh, because they don't work a 9-to-5, you know, what are their days like? I'm sure, yeah. you know all about this. But so we're kind of attempting to let people see that creatives or, you know, people who seem to have sort of alternative lifestyles, they just live an everyday life just
right.
like everyone else. So
what's something that you do every day? Besides the obvious things, I mean, what's a less, I mean, we like the obvious things, but super obvious, like something middle obvious that
middle
you do
obvious.
Every day.
Okay. So not drink coffee. That's super obvious.
Yeah.
What do I do? I answer the question, can I have some screen time?
Yeah.
Definitely. Many, 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 many times every day.
So how old are your kids?
They're 8 and 4.
Okay.
Yeah.
I saw a study came out for, well, the Surgeon General just
yeah.
put a warning out yesterday, like they used to have for, well, I think they still do, per packs of cigarettes that are like, don't let the kids get on it too early. And and it made me remember back to battles that I had, that we had with our kids when they were, so it, that doesn't make you, even the Surgeon General doesn't make you write to the kids.
That's for sure. And, you know, I think you got to try to release some of those rules. And, you know, that's just a perfect example of when you need to just shed expectations
right.
and do as you see
yeah.
fit, you know?
Yeah. And they'll come out okay. And
yeah,
it is a thing that, you know, and I think you're addressing this, and the artists that you include and the writers that you include are all addressing the need to pay attention to something out there in real
yeah.
life
yeah.
and to be, to have your eyes open.
Yeah. and divert your attention maybe from the things that you think are shiny and,
right,
you know, that are built to keep your attention and pay attention to other things, but at the same time sort of expanding just what you think maybe is worth your attention. I think, you know, lots of people are starting to realize how destructive, you know, an obsession with social media or screen time can be. And while that's true, at the same time, you know, it's a part of who we are. And, you know, if it weren't for social media and Instagram, I wouldn't have a magazine and I right. wouldn't have connections. So, you know, just remembering that you have the power to decide when something is valuable and when that value ends, you know, that's really something that's the thing that you should pay attention to is,
right.
is what kind of value you're getting from something and not, you know, preconceived conceptions of what should entertain you.
Right. Yeah. Well, I think this has been a great conversation. If people want to find Quotidien around, and mm-hmm. are both these publications locally found or not?
Yesterday Quarterly and Quotidien are both available at Dear Mom
yep.
in Indianapolis, which is the best place right now to get your print publications. It's a fantastic little shop.
It is.
You can also buy Quotidien here at the Tube Space.
Yep.
And then I am working on maybe getting it in a couple other places.
And they can get on your website and order it?
Yeah, that's the main way that I'm selling things right now, www.readwritebooks.net. They're both available there. You can also get a subscription to Yesterday Quarterly, and then you won't miss any issues.
And the next quarter will be coming out in?
That would be June.
Okay.
Yeah, and that's going to be a big wave surfer in California. Her
nice.
Name is Bianca Valenti, and she's definitely, I've seen some snippets of the interview, and it's going to be kind of as wild as you think a big wave surfer in California interview would be. So
that's great.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, Lee. And you did mention your social media that is also the best way to find updates and stuff. And that's
At Read Write Books on Instagram. You know, look out. We'll do another call for submissions once I'm, you know, feeling creatively energized enough to start on volume 4. Connect with me there. Like I love to hear from people. I'm a decided introvert, but social media works for me. And
yeah.
You know, it's been surprisingly fulfilling and delightful to be working with people. So I hope people will come check it out.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Thanks, Jim.